Put that coffee down. Coffee's for closers only.
This is a Character Animation Bootcamp private class podcast, a cavalcade of character animation wisdom for your cranium.
I knew Joey and I were going to have fun sitting down to chat with indie animator, designer, director, developer Joe Russ. He and his company, Mography, are currently creating the amazing indie game Jenny LeClue that was funded by a very successful Kickstarter campaign. And I was really proud to have been a part of the original team creating some of the original rigs for the characters. And it's just a terrific project that you should absolutely check out. Joe also directed the short film Fathoms, a personal project that he also funded with a Kickstarter campaign. He's not only an amazingly talented guy, but he's also one of the hardest working and most prolific artists I know. I just can't believe how much work this guy gets done on a day-to-day basis. It's really remarkable and admirable. Joey and I met in and around Ringling College. Both Joe and Joey taught there briefly, and I teach there now. And so we've known each other for quite a while, and we all really enjoy hanging out and geeking out about our mutual loves for animation and technology and all that kind of good stuff. So this was a very fun conversation for us, but I think also a really good one for you to hear, because we haven't talked much about animation, character animation for gaming. Joe has been dealing with that exact problem and issue with the development of Jenny LeClue, and it's also significant that Jenny LeClue is specifically 2D character animation. So a lot of good topics here that are really relevant to our class. So I hope you guys really enjoy our chat with the hilarious and fun Joe Russ. All right, well, Joe Russ, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Obviously excited to talk to you guys and your class. So.
Yeah, it should
be
fun.
Let's do it.
Yeah, well, let's kind of start at the beginning of the beginning. You obviously have a love for character animation, otherwise you wouldn't be doing it. So how did you kind of get interested in it? Were you a fan of animation as a kid? Or?
Yeah, definitely. Growing up, you know, everyone's exposed to cartoons, Saturday morning cartoons and animation. And I definitely fell in love with a lot of like Japanese animation in the whatever that was, the early mid 90s,
sure.
As it was just kind of properly making its way across the sea. And I think I was most fascinated by Japanese animation, where they treated the animation as a medium, whereas in America, even now, it's still really treated as a kid's genre for the most part.
Right.
And
right.
I think that's what made me really obsessed, is like, I love drawing and illustration from comics, and I love animation. I love the idea that it's just another way of telling a story with characters, so.
Right. Were there any particular films from that time that were like your big revelatory?
There's a very specific, there's a film that's an anthology of three short films by the famous manga artist and animator Otomo, who I think is known for Akira.
Yes, sure.
And it's called Memories, is the sort of anthology, and there's a specific film called Magnetic Rose, which is a sort of sci-fi operatic ghost story. It's like it's like everything I love, and so it's like nerdy and kind of emotional.
Sure.
People should watch it. I don't know. It's one of the greatest like short films, I think, animated short films ever.
Right.
If you like any of those things. So.
Definitely. That's one I don't know. I'll have to check that one out for sure. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So were you also into like humor? You sort of said that it was kind of the adult nature of the anime that kind of attracted you. Did you like also humorous stuff and that kind of stuff too, or was it really the anime that was kind of your thing?
Yeah, I guess I was just attracted to the idea that of it as a medium versus like
specifically for kids.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely like, you know, there's some beautiful, especially now there's this sort of French wave of animation that's this beautiful hybrid of where they're taking that, like, the exaggeration from, like, Warner Brothers cartoons and I can't think of it, like, Hanna-Barbera stuff mixing it with sort of the polish of some of that Japanese style, and you get these kind of crazy over-the-top animations where the stylization is so beautiful, and I'm definitely, at least now, I'm definitely obsessed with that, where where they can tell you, they could tell you a story where there's no real depth to it, but it's just sold strictly on animation style with characters, and it's just really fun to watch, and they can often be kind of absurd and ridiculous, and I definitely love that stuff too. So
yeah, that's good stuff. Did that kind of lead you towards studying animation when you went to school, or did, you know, was the love for anime partly what got you into motion graphics, or were those sort of different parallel tracks?
Yeah, I mean, I think I love motion graphics, hopefully like other people, where it's sort of a collage medium where you pull a bit of everything together, and I have overlapping influences. You know, growing up, I loved comics, I loved sort of photoreal drawing and painting and sculpture and animation and film. And motion graphics ended up being kind of one of those things where I could dabble in a bit of all of that stuff, because it brings all those things together. I think initially what happened is I made a bootleg DVD menu for a David Lynch film called Mulholland Drive. And then someone was like, you know, that's what motion graphics is. And I was like, oh, I want to do that. So I ended up going to school at Savannah College of Art and Design, and they actually had a broadcast design and motion graphics program at the time. So I specifically went for that kind of animation versus other people went for, you know, 3D character animation.
Right. So what made you not choose 3D character? Was it that diversity, that ability to do a lot of different things, or?
Yeah, it seemed again, I like to have my hands in a lot of pies. it seemed like that feels like it could be limiting if it was really just about animating a kind of bipedal or quadruped character, and it's like, well, what if I want to, you know, do background set design, modeling, lighting? What if I want to just do 2D animated stuff, like non-character? What if I want to do kinetic type?
Right.
What if I want to just do some kind of living painting collage? And again, I think motion design, motion graphics, whatever you want to call it, is that place where you can do any of that stuff, and there's a lot of flexibility in that.
Yeah, right. When did you first animate a character? Was it Fathoms, or was it before that?
I've done some character animation stuff for for clients, for commercial jobs.
Okay.
Nothing as long as Fathoms, but I've done a little bit here and there. I've definitely like the Android robot thing. I've done some animations with that, but. Mm-hmm. And some other simple kind of characters like that, but nothing as complex as what I did in Fathoms.
Mm-hmm. Joe, could you for the students that maybe haven't looked at the show notes that are right below this interview,
right under my feet.
Exactly, I'm pointing down, and you can't see it because it's a podcast. But if you could just talk a little bit about what Fathoms is and how it came to be and all that stuff.
Sure. It's a short animated film. It's a personal project, an internal project I made a few years ago, and I kickstarted it, and it was sort of a process art, like a cathartic thing for me, where it was inspired kind of by the loss of my dad at an early age, and for me it was sort of a nerdy way of expressing my feelings about that and in kind of my medium of choice, and also kind of pushing myself as a visual storyteller. And I intentionally made it a very long short film, knowing that would kind of limit its like film festival outreach, but it was about me doing exactly what I want, making kind of the creative choices I want, and not being limited by like a client or an agency or any of that kind of designed by committee, so I could make my choices, good or bad, and tell a story the way I wanted. Is that I don't know if that's what you asked.
Yeah, no, that's great. What about the decision to do the character animation in 3D? That's kind of a, you know, that's a huge step if you haven't done a lot of character before.
Yeah, and I'm definitely one of those people who also likes to always be in over my head. I think if I was ever really good at something, I would get bored. So I'm always looking for something, you know, to bite off more than I can chew. And sure. Initially, I wanted to do the characters 2D, and then I was making these 2.5D rigs in After Effects. And then I had a couple friends helping me, but they were 3D animators, so they sort of pushed me into doing 3D characters. So they built all these characters, and then they kind of fell away because they couldn't dedicate the time to it, and I didn't have the kind of financial resources to pay them to do that much work. So then I was kind of stuck in this weird place where I had sort of a choice between going full 3D and going 2D, and I think I just decided at that point to try sticking with the 3D, and I mean, there's definitely, you know, I learned a lot of things, good and bad, from doing that. But I think it was part of just being able to experiment with that. I didn't have to deliver a perfect product for a client. You know, there wasn't a 3-day deadline, so it was kind of okay if I needed to make some stumbles and find my way through the process of, you know, complex 3D rigs.
Yeah. And was that in Cinema or Maya?
Yeah, that's Cinema 4D.
That was Cinema.
And it was fun because it was the... Now there's that great auto rigger built into Cinema, and at least can get you pretty far along pretty quickly. But when I started building that, I mean, there was the bone stuff, but it's pretty rough days by comparison.
Yeah. They've improved things a lot since then, for sure.
Yeah.
So how did you approach diving into something so complicated like character animation? Did you get books? Did you look at tutorials, or did you just try to just figure it out on your own?
I would say a mix of all that. There's definitely lots of, as you know, there's lots of online resources.
Sure.
And looked at reference, and for me, a lot of it, story heavy stuff like that. You know, I definitely do storyboards and script, and then a board-o-matic, an animated storyboard first. And and then a lot of it was, at this point, I was basically the only person doing the project. So I also looked at what are going to be some cheap ways to avoid character animation, where it's like, you know, it's just me, and a lot of character animation is very expensive to do and not necessarily important to the story.
Sure.
Whether you see a full body shot of a character walking,
right?
You know, that may not be important, but that may actually take a lot of time to do. So,
Shoot them from the waist up.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. I love doing that.
And I've definitely learned some things. A lot of what I wanted to do, I actually, if I did it again now, I might actually do a hybrid where if I had 3D characters, I would do motion capture stuff and then animate the parts on top of that, the face expressions and dialogue and stuff. But for the overall body stuff, it's actually pretty easy to do rig stuff, motion capture stuff. And there's a lot of I don't want to call it stock footage, but animation stock you can get of motion capture stuff, and that can be a really good base. I think for me, it wasn't critical about, I was trying to do something that had a lot of moving parts, so I wasn't critical about, I had to accept, you know, it's just me now, so I can't expect to be the best, be the best character animation, since it's more of this kind of bigger story focus, but what is the kind of best I can do with what I have?
So, sure. Well, I mean, you know, Disney used rotoscoping crazy all through the classic Disney era. So the idea of using things like mocap and rotoscoping and reusing animation, Disney did that a lot too. I mean, that's normal.
Yeah, and people, and I always think it's funny where people call them out it's a negative. And I'm like, well, if it worked, you know, and you know, even a big, super expensive production has to make some kind of, you know, financial or time decisions at some point. And it's like, well, if they know they're going to use the same kind of dance sequence and they know it works, and
Yes,
absolutely. I don't know why that's such a like hard thing to do.
No. And it's really, it's snobby when people, you know, get uppity about that stuff, because it's about the character and the story and the performance of the character. And if, however you get there, you know, it's just a matter of getting there, right? So it doesn't matter how. So were you working when you were doing that? You were pretty much working all pose to pose, right? You were figuring out where the key poses were, or were you using more, expressions, oscillations, things like that?
Mostly pose to pose, but there are definitely some places where there was a good sort of shortcut hack. I saw this M.Dot Strange, who's this sort of out there animator guy. Now I think he's also doing some interactive stuff, but he was doing character animation C4D, and he's doing tons of stuff very quickly. And you would never say he's, you know, necessarily the best at it or whatever, but it's always fascinating how quickly he could work, how much content he could produce. And a big thing he did was use expressions for a lot of things where he didn't need really tightly controlled animation. So he might make a character dance using a bunch of essentially wiggle kind of automated vibrate tags or something.
Sure.
That would just kind of, even if it wasn't like a brilliant animation, it's like, oh, I want to fill this scene with 20 people in the background dancing. And it's not important that their dance is beautiful and elegant because, you know, you're watching the character in the foreground. I just need this energy. So let me kind of have this do a lot of the work for me. And I definitely, when you are, when you are doing something kind of indie yourself or your very small team, it's like, where are the places where you can make those kind of more creative choices and kind of come at things sideways, where it's like not every single thing needs to be, you know, beautifully hand touched and frame by frame posed.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and again, the most important thing is the story itself. And with Fathoms, it's a kind of heavy story, you know, it's very moody, it's very emotional. So you really had to have characters that were kind of performing. Can you talk a little bit about that, about kind of creating that mood and how you thought about the character's performance?
Yeah. And I think we've talked about this before as well, that the, whether it's character or non-character stuff, I definitely believe that the concept, the story, whatever the emphasis is, informs everything. And if you have that strong foundation for informing your design, your color palette, your movement, it explains a lot. And it is, in this, it was meant to be kind of a heavy story. It's not really like a rainbow and sunshine, happy ending story. So I wanted my characters to be physically very kind of like everything's kind of in slow motion, and everyone is very, some of the story is underwater, but they move like they're moving through butter, and it's this kind of very soft and almost weak kind of movement that expresses kind of physically shows that where they are emotionally and the kind of world they're in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something I always appreciate when people bring the movement, whether it's into a single character, who their personality is, or into the like tone of a world. Because I'm very big on atmosphere and tone and storytelling. And I think that can even get down to, you know, the way you're easing your animation, or, you know, the general timing of things. So,
right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, great. Well, that maybe is a good segue into what you've done next, which is Jenny LeClue, which is also a very atmospheric, moody, and really complicated story, because now it's interactive. Maybe you could quick describe for everyone just what Jenny LeClue is in a nutshell, and then we can talk a little bit about the character animation side of it.
Sure. It's an indie adventure game we're working on right now, and it's episodic, it's very story focused, and it's about a young gumshoe detective, and it's sort of a mashup of Nancy Drew and Twin Peaks.
That's a great tagline. I love it.
Nice.
And your decision with Jenny LeClue was to do 2D character animation, and I guess I didn't realize that you had originally conceived Fathoms that way. So was Jenny kind of an opportunity to go back to revisit what you had kind of originally imagined, or was it about just doing something different than Fathom?
I obviously love 2D animation. That's why I always want to do it. And I don't trust myself to do frame by frame hand drawn. And I would say I'm lazy, so I like relying on computers to fill in the frames for me.
Yeah.
But with Jenny, I think it was actually an overall aesthetic choice where a lot of the demand for commercial work and motion design is getting more and more visual effects, now even more interactive. And a lot of the client work I've done is very focused on shiny 3D things, exaggerating the sense of depth. And for me, this being an internal project and, you know, I'm creative directing it, is for me, it was important to do something that was the opposite of that and get away from that. And so I'm really looking at creating a world that's very graphic, and I'm not intentionally trying to flatten it as in make it feel one dimensional, but really getting away from that shiny reflective sphere on a white psych, and, you know, extruded type flying out at the camera. So for me, it was kind of an aesthetic counter to a lot of the client work I've been doing. And I think that, you know, that boils down to if I want the world to have this rectilinear side on kind of symmetry, then I want the characters to also reflect that. And weirdly, a lot of influence from Wes Anderson films with David Yowman, who's been the DP on all of his films. Mm-hmm. Where as weird as that is, they do really push this really flat, graphic, kind of beautifully curated, unnatural framing a lot of the times.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of taking that even further and making that something that actually is illustrated 2D and graphic, and building the characters that way too.
Right, right. Now, Jenny LeClue was sort of started in After Effects, I know because I helped you with the rig on it.
But
can you talk about, kind of as you guys have moved forward with the process, how do you think about creating character animation in an interactive setting? Like, how, you know, you're no longer just starting from the beginning and going to the end. How do you start to think about how to break that apart and work that into interactivity?
Yeah. The nice thing is you can reuse. I mean, you basically have to reuse a lot of animation. So you think, the first thing is just thinking of, like, Jenny's our main character. She does a lot of stuff. So first thinking in the core kind of animation loops she needs, and figuring out how those can all seamlessly transition. But we're looking at right now for games, there's kind of two ways you can do it. You can render sprites, which are basically really, really unoptimized movies where you're saving a giant image with every single frame baked into the image. And those are nice because you can do whatever you want visually, as complicated as you want, and play it back and it looks the same just like a video, but it uses a lot of memory and a lot of storage space, which is a problem for a game. And part of it is our game, we're trying to get it onto mobile devices, so we really want to minimize, there's some, you know, technical overhead stuff we want to minimize. So the other option is to basically have a rigged character, animate it. We can do it in After Effects and bring it into C40 or Maya or whatever, and then bring that into Unity, which is where we're doing the programming. And then you basically just bring in the keyframes and it renders your character in real time in the game. And the big advantage of that is you're using your texture memory and file space and the amount of memory and file space you need for the keyframes, but you're not baking every single frame. So if your game runs at 60 frames a second and you want a sprite that runs at 60 frames a second, you need 60 frames of images for 1 second. But if you do it the kind of rigged way, you need however many keyframes there are for your character, and then the sort of textures or images that that you're manipulating like a puppet in this case, or if, you know, if it's a 3D character, the geometry and the texture.
Sure, sure. Have you guys pretty much decided that that's the route you're going? Have you kind of figured out your workflow, or are you still working on that?
We're still working on it, but right now I also totally blanked until recently that After Effects and Cinema 4D have really tight integration now.
Yeah.
And basically Unity has really nice integration with Cinema where you can bring animation directly in. Keyframe things you can't do, like if you do like you know, particles or expression things, it doesn't know what to do with that, but like position, scale, rotation, it can deal with that. So we're actually looking at building some and then importing that into Unity, so people could animate certain things still in After Effects, and then we could bring it in real time, drop it right into our game engine. And because most of the people I know who are working on the animation are best at animating in After Effects, and I want to make sure our workflow is best for the most people to be able to work on it. But you know, there's always technical stuff.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask about the puppet tool. I seem to remember one of the issues was a concern that if you have a character rig in After Effects that's largely a puppet tool, and Jenny is like 80% puppet tool, that's something that doesn't, you know, really translate outside of After Effects.
Yeah, so that's true. So that's where Jenny, who is our most complicated kind of animated character, she is almost 99%, 100% going to be rebuilt
in Cinema.
In Cinema. Right now, like, we released this free playable teaser because she's really the only animated character in it. We were able to get away with still just using the sprites because it saved us time. But yeah, we're working on rebuilding her because she's going to have a lot of animations as a bone-rigged sort of puppet thing in Cinema. Because yeah, the puppet tool in After Effects doesn't really translate, at least as of now. There's no kind of third-party tools to translate it. So anything we do in After Effects, again, you can get position, scale, and rotation. So for third-party for characters who aren't the main character, Jenny Clue, and characters who have less complicated animation, we're building them that way, where we only need a few animations, and so they're just parented, you know, the forearm to the upper arm to the torso, and I think that'll be okay. But Jenny, I think being more complicated and having a lot more interaction, I think it makes sense for her to be this kind of more elaborate rig.
Sure, sure. And have you guys looked at Spine at all, the new third-party Spine that's supposedly made for 2D characters in games?
Yeah, it looks really cool. I'm wary of adding additional software to kind of our pipeline that's not already integrated in one of the other ones, because we already have so many steps.
Sure, sure.
And we're building a lot of we have this sort of elaborate way of building our backgrounds now that's essentially like Photoshop to After Effects, After Effects to Cinema 4D, Cinema 4D to Unity. And we're trying to keep everything flowing roughly through that pipeline. And we, you know, those are pretty established platforms, so it's not as dodgy, and we're not as worried that company will go out of business in 3 months and not support the software. So I'm trying to be really conservative I'm a big geek, and I like checking out what's, you know, the newest feature and the latest, you know, there's the newest Adobe CC suite. But I'm like, we're trying to produce a thing, and we have really limited resources, and we're trying to do a lot, and all these things are overpowered for what we're trying to do. So we're really trying to focus on streamlining our workflow and not creating more potential headaches if we don't need it. So
sure.
So we're trying to, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no, you go ahead. Go ahead.
So I'm just saying, so I'm being very kind of aggressively strategizing about what works best for us and what other people will be familiar with. Cause you know, also, like Spine, we'd either have to find animators who already know that, or other people we bring in have to get up to speed on it.
Sure.
As well. And it's like, do you want to spend the time, if someone's a good character animator, do you want to deal with a couple days or weeks or months of them getting up to speed on that? Or do you want them to use that time to animate the characters? You
know? Right. Absolutely. So, well, you talked about mocap before. Have you investigated the new Adobe Character Animator, I think is what they're calling it?
Have you... That's the one where like you can use your webcam or
yeah, it's basic. It's they call it character animation, but it's basically just a simple built-in mocap system.
Yeah,
and it looks really interesting.
Yeah, it looks cool, and I think it's just still kind of a preview thing, right? You can't actually.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's basically in beta, is my understanding.
And yeah,
it's definitely interesting, although I think it's also worth mentioning, you know, when you look at the example, the animation is horrible because and like I always like to tell students is animation is a performance. So motion capture is great if you've got access to Andy Serkis or you are as talented a performer or you're willing to be a performer. You know, you have to perform, and it's a great tool, but the example was just some dude sitting in his office waving his arms around.
and
you're going, well, that's not really animation. So it's like waving your arms around, you know.
I think you know, any tool that helps you do what you need to do is cool, but right. I agree the challenge of that is now you're taking a performance with character animation where you have time to revise it and kind of process it. Is now it's a real time thing. So like you're saying, yeah, not everyone is an Andy Serkis, and there's one Andy Serkis. So then the challenge of that is like, yeah, A, can that tool, you know, get the nuance of what he's doing or what you're doing, and are you able to translate that physically? And right. I know I don't have that, you know, performance ability in real time. But
sure.
I think it's you know, another tool. And if they stick with it, it might be a nice thing. Like occasionally, I know most people, I don't know a lot of people use it, but, you know, even After Effects has that, like, I can't remember what they call it, like live trace or something.
Yes.
And you can have, you know, move the mouse around in real time and it'll set keyframes. And sometimes I use it for stuff where I'm just simulating someone moving a mouse on a screen. But sometimes I use it to just really quickly rough something out that wouldn't make sense to just do with three or four keyframes. And, so, you know, sometimes it's helpful. Not something I always use, but
yeah,
I think it could be cool.
Well, and it's also, you know, like we were talking about using expressions and doing kind of, you know, little quote-unquote tricks like that. You know, something like that might be great for background characters if, once again, you just have to really, really quick get a crowd of people waving their arms. That might be a perfect opportunity to just hook that thing up, wave your arms around it a little bit, and you're done. And, you know, and again, as long as your main characters and your main story is getting across, so what if you're, you know, I always look at it like if you save a little time on that crowd, then you can spend more time making the main character's performance better. So, you know, so again, it's, I don't think it pays to be snobby about that kind of stuff.
Joe, how do you so one of the things that Morgan's teaching in this class is how to basically link different actions together, and he's got this cool formula how you go from a neutral pose into an anticipation into, you know, an action, and then a, you know, and basically you string them together. But when you're doing something that's interactive like Jenny LeClue, how do you deal with that? For example, if you're animating her running, but then the player might have her run and then immediately hit a button that triggers like a different animation. How do you transition between those things? How do you deal with that? Or do you even like care? Are you just like, oh, there's going to be a little bit of a jump there and that's okay. Like the player won't notice.
Well, I like you guys, I'm an animation snob, so of course I care. it's like if there's anything I can do about that, you know, to make that smooth, I will. And this is another advantage. If we do sprites, we have to, if we want a seamless transition, we have to build another animation that transitions between wherever we are in one animation and in another. And that's never perfect because, like you're saying, if you're doing a run cycle and she stops halfway through and you need a, like, you know, skidding to a stop and a little overshoot animation, it's never going to be perfectly aligned with wherever her run cycle stopped, but you at least try to make like a transition, and that's what we've done with sprites. But the beautiful thing, of course, with a rigged character that's happening in real time in your game engine is just like you can do, you know, blend shapes, morph poses, and in cinema, you know, you can do motion clips and you can blend them and fade between them, and it literally blends the you know, position, scale, rotation values between animations to create a transition. You can do that in real time. So if we create with like Ginny, who's sort of this real-time rig, if you create the run cycle and you create this sort of stop running cycle, you can blend between them and create it, you know, and it's not as perfect as hand animating that moment, but it's dynamic and you can still get that kind of smooth transition of her running and having a sort of stop running, skidding animation cycle, or if she's going to run and then jump and we want to have her run, you know, dip down, have that anticipation before she jumps instead of just popping off the ground, we can have both of those animations, a full jump animation, the full run animation, and we can, you know, spend 6 frames, some kind of transition.
Right.
But, you know, it's trade-off because we can't count for every single, you know, with the player having control, we're not, you know, it is not this one-to-one animation where we know Ginny needs to run for 1 second, right here she stops, dips down, jumps, grabs this bar, drops off it, you know, catches her balance when she lands. It's like the player's going to choose when these things happen, and the animation needs to be sort of general enough to be these loops that can do the different state she's in and then find some way to blend between them.
That's awesome. It's pretty slick.
Yeah, really interesting. Yeah.
I mean, in some ways it's actually easier because it's like, if she's running, we just make one good running cycle. Mm. If she's stopping, we need one stopping cycle. And, you know, we even have like the joystick is analog. The harder, you know, the further you push the joystick, the faster she'll move. So we even can basically time stretch in real time the keyframe cycle of a run cycle. So if you move the joystick, you know, 10% of the way all the way to the right, then we might play her run animation at 10% speed. At a certain speed, we'll just switch to a walk cycle because it looks bizarro. It looks like she's slow motion running. But you can do that nice thing where instead of having to keyframe 50 different run cycles, we can have it play full speed when she's 100, when someone pushes the joystick, you know, 100% to the right. And at 50%, she might, you know, it plays back a run cycle at 50%. Or again, if we think that feels too weird, we'll make a mid-speed run cycle and then it'll transition almost like fading to that in the keyframes. And it's really nice because that dynamic thing lets you create even more kind of complex animation in real time.
Neat. Awesome.
Yeah.
Are you going to, Ginny going to have a lot of facial expression and is she going to emote facially, or is that going to be a little more limited, or what are you planning there?
Yeah, we have a certain sort of mechanic where you kind of have these, the camera is closer in on your characters, but most of the time you're kind of seeing your characters at a distance, and there we'll have facial expressions. And I think we're going to do the way we're doing it right now is a hybrid of basically being able to switch between specific like mouth shapes. You're basically kind of turning on and off different mouth shapes if they're talking or making a different expression. But also we have some sort of rigged parts. If it was an After Effects, you know, it'd be the puppet tool. Like that rig you made where it is that hybrid where, you know, maybe her eyebrows are floating above her head. You know, they're their own shape and they can be moved up, down, left, right, rotated. But you also can switch between 2 or 3 different actual eyebrow shapes,
which are
maybe different images. So it's this sort of hybrid expression.
Right. Awesome. Well, I've got a couple kind of student-y questions here because we've got a bunch of students who, many of whom are kind of approaching character for the very, very first time. And you kind of, as you said, you kind of taught yourself, you've kind of learned on your own. Maybe talk a little bit about what do you think is maybe the most important thing that you've learned about animating characters?
Well, I mean, it's definitely characters are complex, so I couldn't say there's any one thing, and I'd say, you know, whatever works for you works, but I definitely... I'm not precious about it, so there's definitely times where I'm trying to nail some kind of specific animation with the character and it's just not working, and I will just straight up record reference of whether it's me or a friend, or I will just rip reference from the internet, go find a YouTube video of a cheetah running and just straight up, you know, animate over that and go, okay, now it kind of looks like what I wanted it to be. Now, how do I tweak this to work?
Sure.
And it's like not being precious about sometimes, like we were just talking about you know, Disney rotoing their own, reusing their own animation because it worked.
Yeah.
And that's definitely one, is just, you know, being okay with like figuring out whatever you need to kind of get you there. And in those cases also, you know, I'm able to like look at frame by frame, what is it that's actually happening in that animation? Why is that working? And what I was doing without that reference.
Right. Right.
You know, wasn't. So as we always say, reference is king.
Like, yes.
Whether it's whether it's a style thing or whether it's motion or whatever it is, definitely reference. Oh, real life, other people's art, your own kind of reference you make. I think that's the biggest one. And then for me, a lot of times I like to, if I was getting into character animation, I would say get all the complexity out of the way, because that's definitely a thing. Like in Fathoms, I have these fully rigged people, you know, and you know, they have 10 fingers, they have 10 toes, and there's so many moving parts, and it's so easy to just break the thing that it gets overwhelming sometimes. And it's like you're moving, it's like you're trying to animate a like a cruise ship, and it's like, is this thing supposed to be nimble? Because it doesn't feel like it is. And that's where sometimes it's like, if you're getting into it, go in After Effects, make a 2D square solid or shape layer, and say, how do I tell a, you know, a simple story with this if it was alive? And where are those, how do I bring those animation principles in to make it feel alive? Because then you can really focus on just a few properties and how to communicate a story with the motion and the kind of emotion that your animation communicates. And for me, I always find that really good, because you can strip away a lot of that like technical overhead that can really cloud what it is you're actually trying to do. You know, if you're spending all your time fiddling with the knobs, you can't focus on whether what you're doing is communicating an idea or an emotion properly.
No, that's great advice. I 100% agree. And you might have already answered this question. What I was going to ask next is, what was the hardest thing for you to learn? And was it that complexity? Was it punching through that complexity? Or was there something else that was like a real, that you really banged your head against while you were learning?
Yeah, and I would say I'm definitely still learning. I'm certainly not any kind of master character animator. But hardest thing, I think, like a lot of other things, is knowing when to shut it down. You know, you've been doing a walk cycle, and you've been working on it for 4 days, and it somehow seems to just keep getting worse. And sometimes there's that point where you go, you know what, it might actually be better to take what I learned from this, scrap that, because I just can't save this, do it again with what I learned. But sometimes you can, you know, kind of figure out where you got off on the wrong path, like where you went wrong, and like fix it. And that's one of those I'm still learning. And again, if you have a complex kind of character rig, you know, that can be a dodgy thing where you're like, okay, I've got 500 keyframes in this 3-second shot, and 2/3 of it looks great. This one moment feels bizarre, and it's not communicating the personality or the message that this character is doing. It's like, do I figure out how to like sort of scrap that part and redo it, or do I just kind of push through it? And I still find that very difficult, and I think that could apply to, you know, other things as well. But it's just knowing when to sustain and when to pull the plug.
or restart,
I guess, not pull the plug.
right. Well, when you're looking at demo reels, when you're looking at an animator to hire for a project, specifically looking at character, what do you look for? What do you want to see in that reel?
Yeah, if it's specifically character animation, I'm probably not going to worry about the aesthetic of what they're showing me. But ideally that they're... that, you know, I'm sure you guys have talked about the fundamental kind of character animation principles, but that their characters have a proper sense of motivation, whether it be just physically kind of believable, because a lot of all those principles come out of a sense of physics and motivated movement, whether it's motivated by physics or motivated by emotion. So I think I would look for animation that has that understanding, even if it's not perfect, they show an understanding of those principles and motivation. Again, whether it's just that if the cube is jumping, that it first needs to kind of squish down to build up that kinetic energy, or whether it's like figuring out how to, in the pose and the timing, convey a character going from smiling to crying, and them understanding some of the sort of the human nuance of that. So
right. Do you think as a, you know, motion designer yourself who's kind of gotten into character, do you think that's a smart thing to do for motion design people? Is it useful? Is it helpful? Does it make your motion graphics better if you're good at character?
That's a good question. I don't think it would make you worse. I mean, I think when I look at
love that answer.
Nice. When I look at great animation, I think it's clear that this person has an intuition and a passion and an interest in a strong sense of the way things could be. You know, again, like what's the thing beneath that's causing this thing to move and informs the way it moves, mm-hmm. why it moves, and whether it's a complex character or, again, they're moving a piece of type that's unmasking. Like, I usually can tell when I watch something, they understand timing and they understand making appealing movement that isn't distracting or reinforces whatever the message is. And for me, I think if you're better with your character principles, it can help, but it's also, there's that definitely that area where, like, you definitely need to understand the appropriate usage of style, just because you might want to sort of squash and stretch your character when they're running and jumping and stuff. Does not mean you want the N type for Citibank. You do not want the type to come out and smush together and look like it's made of springs, because then it's like, is this like, you know, is this for little kids? Are you saying that, you know, that they're spongy and they don't, you know, where you want to convey that their type is strong and firm and balanced and safe? You know, if your type is bouncing around like an idiot, then that's not appropriate motion.
Right.
So there's certainly that to consider. But I think, again, a great animator, character, non-character, is going to understand even appropriate motion, right? If you have a sad scene and it's about a sort of nuance of facial expression in a human character, you don't want your character bouncing around and being made of jello, unless that's some kind of joke you're playing with the scene. And it's, I think, again, a great animator understands even that appropriate kind of movement.
Yeah. I love that you're using the word appropriate, because I use that word a lot, you know, because you think about something like South Park, you know, and South Park doesn't have quote unquote good animation, but it's appropriate for the style of those characters and the style of humor. And the show wouldn't be as funny if the animation was good, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's a perfect example of it's appropriate movement rather than good, bad, limited, you know, whatever terms you want to use. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I definitely subscribe to a phrase from there's this writing website I read, and he says, let's always remember, whatever these things are we're using, they're tools, not rules. And that whole idea is, even if you like, it's great to know the animation principles, but that doesn't mean you should die hard say, I always need to have my character, you know, having anticipation before they jump.
Right.
Like, is it appropriate for the situation or not? Or, you know, if it's a piece of type or something else, like, is that where you want to go? And like you said, style is a big thing. Understanding that sometimes you will specifically ignore these, you know, these kind of animation, these common kind of fundamentals. Like you're saying, South Park, you're specifically doing that jumping between, you know, holding poses. And that's part of the style conveying that it is, I mean, they've still kind of built it out, but conveying it's this sort of originally paper cutout stop motion animation, and this energy, like you said, that the storytelling is supposed to be crude at times, and so the animation reflects that. Right. Even though, right, we know now they have a really tight pipeline where everything's done in Maya.
Yes, is that amazing?
Very easy for them to tween everything to death,
but
they still lean heavily on, you know, characters snapping pose, and it gives you that energy and that reflection of the kind of tone of the world, and you know, I think that's always important to keep in mind, for sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree with that. Yeah. Well, let's talk hardcore geek shit now. Okay. Let's talk plugins. What yes. are your faves, man? Oh. Let's talk it. Let's talk plugins, expressions, scripts. What do you man. What do you like? of course, Duik. We all know Duik. You can pretty that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, yeah. For After Effects, there's basically nothing better for if you're gonna do like a rigged character than the Duik tools. I don't know. I'm becoming a grumpy old man where I'm kind of becoming more and more anti plugin as I go. Uh-huh. But trying
or,
to think.
Or even little scripts that you like. It doesn't have to be anything super fancy.
Yeah, I get pretty nerdy with expressions anywhere. Yeah. I can you know, if you're looping any kind of animation, which I actually find in a lot of character stuff, even more in when making a game with animation is anything where I can use expressions to loop an animation instead of manually copy-pasting keyframes. Anything where expressions will save me work and keep my workflow more flexible. Yeah. I like to do that. Other plugins specifically for character?
Go nuts, whatever, man.
I think Duik's yeah. really it, man.
It's like the king, isn't it?
Yeah. It's hard to beat that for an After Effects for character stuff, but
Yeah. Joe, I have a question.
Yeah, yeah. So as far as like rigging goes, and we've asked a couple other people this too.
Sure.
You know, cuz a lot of people, especially if you're learning After Effects, you actually kind of learn it backwards, and you learn to rig a character before you actually really understand how to animate. And I was curious, like, you know, if you find that having an understanding of character animation actually makes your rigs better, because, you know, maybe you understand, like, well, okay, the controller needs to be like on this part of the foot, otherwise, like, you know, the toe doesn't actually touch the ground and weird stuff happens. Like, have you found anything like that?
I think like anything in the character stuff is so I don't know what you call it. You can get really deep into it. It's a dark black hole that goes deep into the earth. And it's like, I think it's that thing, you know, the more you make characters, the more you begin to intuit, like you're saying, how you need to set up those characters. But even that stuff is dynamic. You know, you might have a three-legged character with enormous feet, and it's like they're going to have their own requirements versus a character that, you know, is in a hover car and is just a torso on, you know, floating around. And I think there's some stuff that you get better at that, but I have no idea if I answer that question.
Well, like, I guess what I'm wondering is, like, you know, do you ever find yourself, like with Jenny, for example, like fighting the rig and it's, you can't get it to do what you need?
Yeah. Okay. So one thing me and Morgan have talked about that's a big, like, pro tip, and you definitely get more, it's like the more you make them, the more you know to anticipate problems when you make a character. And a rig, just rigging itself, is definitely its own art form. And it's a big thing is, right, you've got to try to anticipate what is the most extreme version of a thing your character needs to do. Because definitely if you don't, the less you anticipate that, the more, like you're saying, you're going to be fighting the rig when you're animating. And me and Morgan have talked about sometimes it's worth investing more time up front to say, oh, this character can do an extreme, unrealistic pose that we don't think we're ever going to need. And then when you're in the heat of animating it, you go, this is, I need for 3 frames. I need this character to be able to go unnaturalistically, stretch their body like Stretch Armstrong, just for this one thing that I never thought I would do, breaking all the rules we expected. And if it can just do that for us without looking like it's exploded, awesome. And if you haven't built the rig for that, then, like you said, it might collapse and you go, shit, we have to do a total hack here or rewrite everything around this. And that's definitely, I think, as you do it more, you can anticipate more how much you need to kind of build your structure for that. I mean, it's like, you know, you're building houses for, like, in SimCity for natural disasters, but you don't know what they are, and you don't know like when they're coming and like how extreme they are, so you're gonna lose a few houses and then like get better at preparing for it. It's like,
I think it's a great metaphor.
That was perfect.
I mean, right? And it always feels like your house is built of toothpicks and you just hope it weathers the storm that is your animation. Like,
beat this horse to death, please.
Yes, okay, I will. But I think that's like definitely Morgan is great about that. Is like we've been talking about character rigs, like for Ginny, and you know he'd be like, okay, so now you know Ginny can literally stretch Armstrong her body in this moment, you know, to it could stretch to 11. And I'm like, we're never gonna use that, you know. And 2 months later, it's like we're stretching her into that pose for some just. You know, exaggerated moment. And it's like, thank God Morgan, you know, was like, no, you need to be able to really go extreme with your character. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just a general pro tip. If you are like properly rigging someone is build them so they can go do way more than you think. Mm-hmm. And even if you always, you know, use 30% of kind of what they're built for, like you said, if it means you're not fighting with the rig, it means you're saving time and focusing more on your character animation, which we're talking about is already complex enough, so.
absolutely. Yeah, I agree 100% for sure.
Yeah,
great. Well, this is awesome. Tons of nuggets here of wisdom. Joey, do you have any last questions for Joe?
Yeah, so I do. I just one, actually. You know, a lot of the students in this course have no character experience, but maybe they want to start doing more character. And, you know, and maybe even myself, I feel like maybe I'd like to do a little more character. But I start doing it, I start doing the exercises, and holy crap, does my character animation look awful. It's really bad, right? But so my question for you is, you know, as someone who has, you know, only fairly recently been really diving into character animation.
Sure.
How long has it taken you to kind of overcome that feeling, or do you still sort of feel that way? Like, man, my stuff's just not as good as I'd like it to be.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'll always feel that way. Like, it's not as good as I want it to be. And I definitely, again, you know, I'm not saying I'm any kind of expert at it, but it's like all this other stuff. Is the more you practice, and the more with the practice, the more that you are self-aware and try to learn and grow from what you're doing. Not just, hey, don't just animate 50 things and never think about it. But if you animate 50 things and you think about, I hate this, what is actually going on that makes me dislike it besides just being self-conscious, and where can I find people who are better than me to learn from, or references of ways to solve this, and like how can I improve it? But I mean, definitely, it's just, you know, especially character animation, so complicated. It's a lot of it's just learning as you do it, and doing it and doing it and doing it till you're at least feel competent, I guess. Mm. I'm assuming no one is ever shouting from the rooftops that they're the master of character animation, because it's just, you know, and if he did, everyone else would like knock him off the roof, because they'd be like,
right,
yeah. You know, what about the rest of us?
Yeah.
Just trying to make it work. So, yeah, I don't know. I think a big thing that I was actually wanted to touch on before is you're asking about what I'd look for in reels. Mm-hmm. And if I'm hiring someone, especially character, I'd look even more at the person as a worker. I don't have a better term for that. But because character animation is so frustrating, and I think even if you're good at it, it's just there's a lot of revision that happens, and it's complex revision. I'd look for someone who has a really good, which in general I'd look for this, but someone has a really good attitude, is passionate about it, and doesn't go, you know, it sucked the first time, I can't do any more work today, you know, mm-hmm. or even the fifth time. You need someone who is like relentless at, I'm gonna nail this, we can do this, you know, has a positive attitude, and is sort of passionate about doing what it takes to solve that. Because in character animation, a lot of it is just having it, you know, you might have to animate your walk cycle 20 times to find the one that feels right and, you know, fits the personality of your character. And it doesn't work if you're someone who goes, oh, I'm going to get it the first time, and you don't, and you give up. Mm. So when I'm hiring someone, I'd look at the reel, and hopefully it communicates that they understand and intuit and have a skill for animating whatever it is they're animating. But then I'd also want to know personally them as a person and a worker, like, do they have that sort of determination and, I guess, sort of stubbornness to sustain through, you know, the pain that is the character animation.
That's really good advice.
That was
right.
Good advice. It's a little it's a little bit of a like masochistic thing. It's like, what is your threshold for pain?
What is the guy, the Greek guy, and
Sisyphus.
Sisyphus? Yeah. Yeah, it's like, how much are you cool with having, like, you know, having to push that boulder back up the hill? And like, knowing that you're doing that and going, yeah, we're going to get it this time. This is going to be the one, you know, and you always get a little closer. But I think that's actually a huge thing. If I was looking to hire someone, especially for character animation, because it's just, I don't know anyone who comes out with great character animation the first time. Even the best, most seasoned people, it's always a process, and it's always a lot of work and dedication and weirdly, very like technical problem solving. In, you know, you have to really be able to break down why something doesn't feel right in the nuance as well as in the really simple kind of functional ways. And that just takes a lot of skill and a lot of patience, I guess. Sustain. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. That's awesome. Love it. All right. That's probably a perfect place to stop. What do you think, Joey? That's like a...
Don't give up now, guys.
Yes, you can do it.
Yeah, do it. Yeah.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was awesome. Thank you so much, Joe.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you, guys. You guys are awesome, and I really appreciate you having me on and chatting to me about the little that I know about character animation.
Joe is a great guy, a very funny guy. But also an incredibly thoughtful artist. It was great to hear his insights and his thoughts about character animation and his process a little bit. Please follow Jenny LeClue. If it's already out by the time you hear this, make sure and get it. If it's not out yet, follow it and watch for it. It's a really beautiful project that I think you'll get a huge kick out of. And keep an eye on MoGraphy. I think we're going to see a lot more amazing things from Joe in the future.